Welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Mike Bratton. Go by SEC Mike. Go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. How's it going, Stephen?
Mike, I'm fired up. We got just not too long before football gets going, man. It's, this time when we talk next week, we'll have games that Saturday. So I guess maybe I'm just trying to match that energy that the SEC StatCat brought to your show in that interview I saw last week. I thought I was fired up for football, and I thought like he went like to the next level. So.
Oh man, people were not happy with his energy, which I cannot fathom why. But yeah, you know whose energy I love here, Stephen Brodo. He's in here, Brodo Baggins, 420. Happy birthday! It's his birthday. He says it's my birthday. Shot 84 on the golf course, drunk as a skunk, eating some lasagna. Cannot wait to hear Stephen call Arch his breakout candidate or the whole Texas team.
I considered putting Arch as a breakout candidate, but I thought that was too obvious, so we had to go with some other names, right? That'd be too obvious, wouldn't it?
It would. So yeah. That's we're jumping ahead, though. That's going to be the show topic on this episode. We're going to hit on all 16 SEC teams with Stephen. Breakout candidates. I don't know how Stephen did it, but mine, I'm doing a little mix of you know, the whispers, that the intel we're getting from fall camp, so we'll get to that in a minute. Stephen's panic meter is updated, fall camp panic meter. It's never too early to panic. Your name's Stephen Lassen, so we'll have that. We got a little reaction to the AP poll, so we're going to have a lot of fun on this episode, Stephen. But before we jump into all that, got to remind the cousins, we are brought to you by MyBookie, the online sports book. Head on over to MyBookie.ag. That's the website. And if you put in an initial deposit with the promo code SEC, they're willing to match your initial deposit all football season long. What a deal for the cousins. Stephen, fade. Me and Shane, listen to Stephen, and we'll get you paid over at MyBookie. You know what?
I liked your over-under picks last night, though. I thought you guys were on the right track. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this, but it always feels like because we know less about these teams than we do, like maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, feels like it takes me a few weeks to kind of get the good kind of like my power rankings kind of adjusted for spreads and stuff. Is that fair? Am I crazy?
I think so. So, yeah. You know, normally you can take advantage of some of these spreads, but which heck, we're probably not doing a good promo here, but I think it really, we won't know until a couple games in who really are the contenders, who are the pretenders. So this is going to be one heck of a season, Stephen, but no need to wonder contender pretender for Cousin JR.
The legend, Cousin JR, has done it again.
JR, shout out JR. We appreciate you, buddy. He's here every episode gifting donations. And this time, Stephen, it's Nathan Struble. Nathan, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. We appreciate you. And we also appreciate, you know, Stephen's a legend, but there's also another legend we got.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Stephen Up. Roll Tide.
Shout out, Stephen Up. We appreciate you, buddy. He gifted a membership to Sooner Fan 82. Sooner Fan, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, appreciate you, Stephen.
I always see Stephen in the comments. So from one Stephen to the other Stephen, shout out there. By the way, gifted a membership to a Sooner after last year's game.
he's moved on. It's 2025, okay. Stephen.
He's the assassin, Stephen Lassen.
Right there. That's why we call him the assassin.
That was my nickname when I played basketball. I used to hang out 3-point shoots, you know, just kind of hit those threes in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Cousin Tony says, is that your alter ego?
I don't know, man. It'd be hard. It's hard. A little dirty little secret is like, it's hard to like pay attention to like the what I'm doing here and keep my mind on track and try to type at the same time. So Stephen Up, I guess maybe Stephen Up, I'm feeding him information before and after the show, right? We're coordinated on notes here.
Yeah. Hey, that is one other thing, Stephen. I did want to add, so you kind of hinted at it. SEC teams, Shane and I, we did this. We don't have to spend a lot of time because cousins, most of them have already seen it. But if you missed it, Shane and I kind of guaranteed the teams that would hit the overs, guaranteed the teams that would hit the unders. I just want to get your reaction to my three, Stephen, that I guaranteed will hit the over. Vanderbilt, I said most likely with a 4.5 over-under win total, so I'm very confident Vanderbilt gets the over. Missouri was my second at 7.5 over, so I like the Tigers to go over that. And then Georgia, really going out on a limb here, over 9.5. Thoughts on those? Do you disagree with any of those? Do you like those? What's your thoughts?
Mike, I love all three of those picks. I think Georgia would probably be my favorite out of that bunch, just almost because it's kind of, we just expect Georgia to get to double-digit victories every year. Vanderbilt, I do think the hard schedule is going to be a challenge. You know, we've talked all offseason they could be a better team, but maybe it doesn't show up in the win column. That being said, I still keep coming back to Diego Pavia is going to will this team to a bowl game, right? And so I love the over there. And of course, I think Missouri is undervalued all offseason. I think they are much closer to a top 25 team than 6-6 or 7-5. So I love all three of those overs.
Okay, we're in agreement. That means we're probably going to be wrong. So next, these are the teams I got going under, Stephen. I'm most confident in Tennessee. Shane, that's why Shane's not here today. He quit. Tennessee, I think, goes under 8.5. Kentucky's my second most confident. Their over-under is 4.5. I think, you know, even though that's a low number, I think Kentucky will be lucky to get the 5 this year. And then Ole Miss, I'm not terribly confident in this one, but I had to make a third selection. I went Ole Miss under the 8.5. Thoughts on those? Do you hate any of those? Do you like those? What's your thoughts?
I like those. So in other words, probably need to fade our picks if we're in agreement, right? I see where you're going with the Ole Miss thing. Like, I could see him being 8-4 this year, but still being a top 25 team. Maybe that after the losses last season, personnel wise, it's going to be hard to get back to the playoffs. So maybe it's like they take a small step back before taking a step forward, but 8-4 is still pretty solid. I agree with you on Kentucky. Like, I just have a hard time finding guaranteed wins in the SEC. Maybe they pull off an upset. Maybe they're much better than I think. I think Tennessee is 8.5 sounds like about right. You know, we've talked those three games, the Georgia, Alabama, Florida. I think you put Oklahoma in the toss-up category. Maybe they stumble against Oklahoma. Maybe they get picked off by Vanderbilt or Arkansas. Given the questions that Tennessee's had with the offense this offseason and the turnover, it feels like I'd feel much more comfortable at 8-4 than 9-3 for Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. And then I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but are there any SEC teams, the over-unders that I didn't just mention there out of the 6, so 10 others that you're particularly confident go over or under? Or any of those come to mind?
Florida, I had a ton of confidence in the over before fall practice started. Now I've gotten pretty scared due to all the injuries, but maybe that is a good opportunity to bet the over here, is all the injuries and Florida gets healthy. I know the schedule was very difficult, but just kind of banking on, you know, Lagway and the way the defense ended the season, I kind of feel confident about Florida hitting the over at 6.5. But I think 7-5 seems very realistic for this team. So I would probably say Florida would probably be one of my favorite bets. Also, we mentioned Oklahoma. I still love the over. That's one of my favorite preseason bets this season.
Mm. Well, I tend to agree with you, but I'm not betting those because I could see things going sideways. I'm not predicting it, but could it happen? I think that's the danger of all the hype in Gainesville and Norman right now. I mean, I'm on pins and needles to see those two teams hit the field this fall. I think both of them will contend for the college football playoff all year long, but I also think their coach, each coach, could get fired by the second month of the season. So, I don't know. It could go either way.
Volatility, I think, is like, if you can tell me, like some of the injury situations, if you showed me a stat line of like Lagway and Mateer, I think I could more confidently predict the middle of the SEC. Those two teams and Auburn are kind of like the three like teams that if you figure out what they're going to be, I think you have a much better idea of how the full 16 will look come December.
Well, I'll tell you what I don't have to figure out, Stephen, and that's if Bradley Hargis is a family member or not. He is. He just became a member. Bradley, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you. And Razor Bass, Razor Bass just became a member. He's been a member before. Shout out, Razor Bass. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, appreciate you guys, and appreciate JP for these awesome sound effects.
Welcome to the family.
All right, Steven. So again, not a huge fan of these polls. I don't want to do this each and every week, but when they come out for the first time, they're kind of interesting. So anybody that missed it, the AP preseason poll, already seeing a lot of people, you know, who the hell cares? Polls are meaningless. I tend to agree, but this is something fun to talk about. So let's run it down real quick. Preseason AP poll. Texas, number one, mighty Texas, 25 first place votes. So Texas, the undisputed number one in both the coaches poll and the AP poll. Georgia's number five. They had one first place vote. Alabama, 8. LSU, 9. South Carolina, 13. Florida, 15. Oklahoma, 18. They weren't ranked in the coaches' poll. They are in the AP. We honor the AP a lot better than the coaches' poll. Everybody knows that. Texas A&M, 19. Ole Miss, 21. Tennessee, 24. And just on the outside looking in, Missouri, 32. Auburn, 37. No other SEC teams got a vote in the AP poll for the preseason anyway. Thoughts on this, Stephen? Any teams you strongly agree or disagree with?
Mike, as always, the media gets it right. The coaches get it wrong. As we need, you know, we need no more evidence of it. The AP voters did a good job. It was good to see Oklahoma ranked. You know, I thought they deserved to be in the coaches' poll. They were not ranked. To see them 18 was a little surprising. I thought maybe they'd be a little bit closer to 20, but good to see Oklahoma ranked. I also was a little surprised to see Tennessee at 24. They were ranked 18th in the coaches' poll. So, little bit of disparity there between the AP and the coaches. So I think for the most part, they got the top contenders right. It's good to see, you know, the right teams in there essentially at this point of the preseason, but a little bit surprised Oklahoma's 18, Tennessee 24. I maybe would move A&M up a few spots as well.
Mm-hmm. And shout out, I don't know if you saw this, Stephen, Chuck Dunlap, the SEC communications director. I thought this was pretty interesting. He said the SEC leads all conferences with 10 teams in the preseason top 25, most ever by a conference and more than a year ago, which I believe the SEC had the record a year ago. The SEC has 4 in the top 10 for the second straight year. So again, it just means more down here, of course. I know that's cheesy, but it's also true. And then shout out Brett McMurphy. Stephen, he pointed this out. I didn't realize this. He said Oklahoma, I'm going to throw up their schedule, and South Carolina, only two teams, just based purely on the AP preseason poll, that play 6 consecutive ranked teams here. Oklahoma's got Texas. They're in Dallas, Arlington, whatever you want to call it, at South Carolina, Ole Miss, at Tennessee, and at Alabama. So again, excuse me, I said 6, 5 consecutive ranked teams. Missouri's just on the outside looking in. And the same deal with South Carolina, who they have at LSU, Oklahoma at home, Bama at home, at Ole Miss, at A&M. And I mean, Clemson on the backside of that. So, again, not saying anything we didn't know already, but Oklahoma and South Carolina, only two that are going to play 5 consecutive ranked teams just based purely on the AP poll. But man, no breaks given to those two, you know what?
For sure. And I think what Florida would have 4 in the early part of the season at LSU, at Miami, Texas, and at Texas A&M. Also, Mike, I think it's worth noting that if you look at like the point totals on the top like 8 or so, they're really close. And this gets at something that, you know, when I was doing the rankings for the Athlon magazine, it does feel like the top 8 or so are really close together. So like if you think Texas is 1 or you think Penn State or Iowa State, like there's not much gap. Whoever you have 8, that gap is pretty small. So we have I think a fairly wide open race for number 1 in the championship this year. You probably would. Based upon your thoughts there in the preseason poll, you probably don't want to hear my rant about how soft Big 12 and Big 10 coaches are for whining about preseason polls this offseason. But I think they're fun. They give us kind of a snapshot going into the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, that being said, so we don't have to run down the whole 8 because, you know, it's the usual suspects. But given that it's now an expanded playoff, And, you know, we have covered ad nauseum, Stephen, NIL transfer portal, how they have kind of hindered the depth of some of the elite teams in the country. Again, I realize why the favorites are the favorites, and they should be. But is there an opportunity, you think, for a team on the outside looking in, not necessarily, you know, guaranteeing they win the national championship, but getting in the playoff, making a run, and the key to it, I think, is having a star quarterback. So, you know, teams that I would project to fit in that model, South Carolina, I think that is clearly one. Perhaps Oklahoma, if John Mateer is who they say he is. We're going to talk some Austin Simmons here in a second, but, you know, what if he just had a rough scrimmage, supposedly, but again, who cares? You know, if he may look like $1 million this fall. Could a team of those caliber, you know, threaten to perhaps even win a national championship, if and maybe even throw Marcel Reed in there? Again, I know a lot of people are like down on him for some reason. I know the Aggies aren't, but given that he was thrown into action last year and he performed admirably for most of the year, you know, if his game takes the next step, I'm not saying that, you know, that even as much as we praise Diego Pavia, as good as he is, he's not taking Vanderbilt to the national championship. But the teams I just referenced, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and they, it's not like it wouldn't be unheard of for these teams, given the talent they have, to make a run like that, is it?
I think that's spot on, Mike. I would also throw probably Florida a little bit too with DJ Lagway. I know they're projected a little bit higher by some. I think, you know, this is an interesting kind of preseason discussion, because when I think about quarterbacks, I always think about they could be kind of almost like parsed into different tiers. And when I say that, I mean, it's like you could throw all the guys who are, they're probably not going to be very good this year. They're going to be like at the bottom of the conference, but there could also be a tier of like, okay, you know, these guys are really solid, but are they good enough to go from number 10 to take you to number one? Or is there a tier of like John Mateer, Lenore Sellers, that maybe they have that ability in a game to just take over? And if they take over, you can get hot, you can win a game or two, and you can work your way to the playoff. I think you're right about Sellers and Mateer. And I keep going back to Mateer, and I think it's not only that. I think it's like, if Oklahoma's defense is as good as it was last year or better, I know Danny Stutzman is going to be hard to replace and some other guys, but I trust Brent Venables. The floor, they totally bottomed out on offense last year. If you get into a playoff game, if Oklahoma just happens to get to 9-3 or 10-2, defense travels. And if you tell me you get a good defense to go with a quarterback that is going to be a nightmare to prepare for, perhaps on short notice to try to chase John Mateer around for four quarters and he hits a big play or two, I think he's in that category. And the same thing with Lenore Sellers. They can just go from take your team from being really solid to winning some games in the playoffs. And those are like the game changers. And I would put both those quarterbacks in there, and certainly DJ Lagway and Austin Simmons as well this season.
And one we didn't reference yet, Stephen, who he may be the best quarterback in the conference when it's all said and done, Arkansas, Taylen Green, of course. Shout out Faye Daddy Hogg. Those Hogs going to play with that damn jukebox this year. We'll be in the top 25 by the end of the season. Woo pig. We appreciate you for being a member. Stephen, what's it going to take for Arkansas by the end of the season? Let's say Frey Daddy here is 100% right. What's it going to take for Arkansas, you think, by the end of the season to be ranked in the top 25? Maybe I'm thinking an 8-4 type record. How do they possibly get there, you think?
Mike, I was just wondering that, because when I was reading his question, I almost thought to, you know, my thought goes to the difficult schedule, and just looking at last year's rankings, it's like 9-4 was kind of your cutoff. So, I mean, would 7-5 be good enough if you're, you know, considering the strength of schedule? This is one of the most difficult schedules in the country. If you get to 7-5 and maybe you lost to Notre Dame, Texas A&M, LSU, Texas, and maybe Ole Miss, but you picked off Auburn, Missouri, you know, you got some other solid wins in there too. I think 7-5 at least gets you in the conversation. I think 8-4 would definitely be a top 25 team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you got to be closer to 8-4. Honestly, I do. Now I see what you're saying. 7-5 if maybe they've lost to five teams in the top 15.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, right. That could be a reality for the Razorbacks, which just make this season so dang hard. You know what?
That's the kind of the question that we have going into the season. You know, there's been a lot of this conversation in the background about what's the playoff, you know, format for beyond this year? What's the new metrics they're looking at? And they keep coming back to like this strength of schedule. Well, if you're going to honor strength of schedule, then this is a good way to do it. Like if you're the committee, send a message, rank the 7-5, the 8-4 teams that play the hard schedules. So I think if you're Arkansas, if you want to feel comfortable about getting ranked, it's like 8-4. Maybe you get there at 7-5 because you're losing to those top 10 to 15 teams, or maybe they beat somebody in the top 10 and they still finish 7-5, but that upset is good enough to carry them into the rankings.
Hey, shout out Colin. He gifted a membership, but I can't see who. So someone in the comments, help me out if you can. And shout out Jason Franken. Glad to be part of the family. M-I-Z. Steven, and again, I know you kind of hit on this, but since he's a Missouri fan and a member for 3 months, let's give Missouri some love here. What, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not surprised at all, 10 being totally stunned. I know Missouri's not ranked in the AP poll, but by the end of the season, where would your surprise be if Missouri is not ranked at the end of the season? Where are you at with that?
That's a good question. I would say it's probably, I think they're like a top 20 to 30 type team this year. I guess I wouldn't be totally stunned if they're not ranked. Like if the preseason expectations, I guess by Vegas are like 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's hard to put a number on this one because I'm kind of like on the middle of this one. I think it, just looking at the AP poll coming into this year, I think Missouri's underrated here. I mean, a team like BYU is getting more votes for the poll. BYU lost its starting quarterback just a few weeks ago, and Missouri has won double-digit games in back-to-back seasons. So I guess I wouldn't be totally stunned if they missed it. So I guess, you know, kind of like somewhere in the middle here, but I do think they are very much in that 20 to 30 range where you give them a couple swing games, they're suddenly 8-4, they're finishing in the top 25.
Yeah. Do you think they would have to be, unlike Arkansas, you know, you said perhaps Arkansas could be 7-5 and ranked. It seems a stretch to me to be Missouri 7-5 and be ranked. I think they, given this schedule, unless maybe, you know, we go on and on about these schedules and how easy they are and how difficult they are. That can change by midseason. All, you know, I'm not going to give Kansas any praise, but you know, maybe what if Auburn's a playoff team? What if Oklahoma is? Then all of a sudden we're like, good God, Missouri's got one of the toughest schedules in the country. But it seems unlikely to me that Missouri's got to be at least 8-4 to be ranked by the end of the year. I would think. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair, Mike. I think we can also look at a little bit of history here. I mean, Missouri finished 22nd last season at 10-3. They weren't getting any respect from the AP last season. And I think the coaches poll had them 20th. So
jeez,
the coaches got that one right, the one time they got a vote right. But I think they've got to get to like 8-4, 9-3 to be ranked. And of course, it also in fairness too, like every year is different too. Like the bottom this year could look a lot different than last year. And maybe 8-4 is good enough based upon what's happening in other conferences.
Well, it looks like old cousin Gregory Gorgon's right, Stephen. STP, something to prove for Mizzou. That's ridiculous. Win 10 games, barely ranked. Hey, shout out Goaler Zachary. Great show. Love the hard work you put in. Thanks, guys. Go Gators, Stephen. So let's give him a little love here for the Gators here. So, no, I mean, any surprise at all that I don't know if this is love, I guess, but that Gators top 15, where were they in the other poll? I think like around 17. Any surprise at all that the Gators are getting all this love, at least in the preseason?
I'm not surprised. I think last year's finish carries a lot of weight. And also, I think they got the star power at quarterback. Now, granted, we don't know how much of a how healthy he is on what the percentage is coming into this year. But I just think back to last season, like Florida picking off LSU, picking off Ole Miss, winning the bowl game. They got the bowl bump, so to speak, by the strong finish. And when you get outside the top nine or so this year, I think it's pretty wide open and kind of gets at the point of there's a lot of returning production here for Florida. They've got a star quarterback. It feels like they turned a corner in those last four games or so. So I think 15th is probably about right. I might have them a spot or two higher, but I think the AP giving them a little bit more respect than the coaches is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. And then, man, we really appreciate all these donations and memberships. Steven, we got another one here. Shout out, Russ Wilcox, who I believe is a Sooner. Russ, welcome to
the family.
Boomer, we appreciate you.
I'm liking all these subscriptions. I can get my reps in like I'm a practice Harris Bailey over here.
No doubt. But shout out. And hey, I'm just reading what he's writing here, right? So Serene and Keen, member for 3 months. We appreciate you, buddy. A lot of fishermen up in Arkansas. Nothing but a bunch of master baiters. According to Serene and Keen, not my words, but his. So we appreciate you and appreciate the funny comment. Ronald Helfen just became a member. Ronald, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you. And Jack Barrett, sorry to backtrack back to Mizzou, but how much does a quarterback battle worry you, Stephen? Pay Bo all that money. $1.5 million allegedly, and he's not a sure thing. And what is Horn showing? So Shane and I kind of discussed that on the last episode, Stephen, but what are your thoughts in case you missed it, in case anybody missed it? Drink said after their most recent scrimmage over the weekend that, you know, we were hoping to see some separation by this point in time, but really that we have not seen that. So it's anybody's best guess who's the starting quarterback right now for the Missouri Tigers. What's your thoughts, Stephen?
I think you could look at it a couple different ways, Mike. I think as far as the portal goes, the whole like supply and demand thing, like you need a quarterback, how many guys are going to jump in? Prabula had a lot of interesting intangibles. And this is not to say he's a bust. I'm just trying to illustrate, I think, why Missouri went out and got him. And also you have some injuries at quarterback for Missouri. You have some youth. You have an experience. You needed somebody. So I think getting somebody who could bring some interesting skill sets, they've played at a pretty premier program in Penn State, it made sense. I think you could also look at this as, is it necessarily a bad thing that both quarterbacks are pushing each other, or is it that neither have been good enough to claim the job? That's what would worry me if I'm Missouri. I'm not too worried right now. I think it's still pretty early. You know, we're kind of getting to that window where I think you'd like to have a starter, like most teams scrimmage once or twice. We're kind of getting into that window where if we get closer to kickoff and there's still some concern here, I will be a little bit alarmed, but I'm kind of going on the motto of maybe it's not a bad thing that both these guys are pushing each other. Maybe you got a little bit more depth, or maybe both guys are just playing better than you anticipated this season.
Yeah. And I would be concerned, Stephen, if you pay someone a lot of money and you say, okay, well, he's got to start because we're paying him. Now, yeah. I'm sure Sam Horn is making good money too. I'm sure just about every quarterback in this conference is making what I think everybody listening to this would consider really good money. So I'm not saying he's there for free or anything, but shout out Cousin Sven. Great point. Sam Horn, he got drafted. Anybody that missed it, Major League Baseball, 7th round pick, left around $900,000 on the table. I hope it works out for Sam Horn. So again, Sam Horn could have left when they added Bo, and there's this allegedly $1.5 million salary he's got. He could have left when it was a baseball draft. He, you know, he's been injured. He could have given up. I mean, he's had every opportunity to not suit up for Missouri, yet he's still battling his ass off to be the starting quarterback. So I'm not rooting for him over one or the other, but I like what I'm hearing about Sam Horn and his competitiveness and his continued fight to try to win this quarterback battle. So honestly, I'm not too concerned here. I'm really not.
It's better to be, I guess, hearing or thinking that both quarterbacks have proven competent enough to run the offense so far, as opposed to going, I don't know if we got a guy that's ready to start. It kind of feels like Missouri could probably win right now with both. And I think games like the Missouri game, the first game of season where they play Central Arkansas, like once you get past the starters, there's really not a whole lot. You know, it's like just how do you get out of here without getting anybody injured? But I think there's some extra intrigue for that opener. On like, I know there's some, you know, there's like some interesting games, but how those two quarterbacks play in that Thursday night game is going to be pretty fascinating for me.
Yeah, and old Russ, Cousin Russ, he says, I think he's tired of this Mizzou talk. Thank you, Mike. Boomer Sooner, horns, and Mizzou sucks. So let's move on, Steven. Speaking of panic, to your fall camp edition of the Panic Meter, what has got you panicked so far as we inch ever so close to the start of the football season? What's on the top of Steven's panic meter here?
Mike, I've got several things on my mind here, but we'll start. How about we start with Ole Miss? You mentioned Austin Simmons. I think some of the early returns out of fall practice have been the offensive line could be a real issue for this team. So I'm putting the panic meter at 7 right now for Ole Miss and the offensive line. I'm not worried about Austin Simmons. I'm not worried about the receivers, but you know, how do you, you know, you protecting your guy to keep him healthy for every game to make a run at the playoff is pretty paramount. You look at that second game of the season at Kentucky, they're going to play Arkansas. They're going to play LSU early in the year. How is this offensive line coming together? Because I think they need to make real significant progress in the next couple weeks to feel good about going up to Lexington and avoiding another upset loss like last season.
Yeah. I mean, this is just such a fascinating year, I think, for Ole Miss and company. How do they respond after the last dance? All they've done is win big down there, basically. Lane Kiffin, I think he's one of the elite coaches in the SEC right now. So there's reason to buy in. We'll get to the breakout players, but the Ole Miss is one where they're going to need some breakout because they lost a lot of star power. But it's interesting to hear that high of a panic meter for Ole Miss. I'm not saying I disagree, but man, I don't have any feel for what Ole Miss is going to be this year. But I do think they're taking a step back. I've been saying that all off season, and I've not heard anything that's taken me off at yet.
A step back though to 8-4 isn't necessarily like the end of the world, considering what they were, what 9-3 just missed the playoff last year. So, it seems like almost like it's bound to happen given what they lose. Also, anytime a team tries to bring in multiple guys to start on the offensive line in one offseason. I mean, we saw this with like Oklahoma last year. We've seen it with other schools. It's very difficult to get a starting five together and have it mesh. And sometimes in the portal, those guys aren't necessarily the good ones are hard to find out of the portal, essentially. So you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel sometimes to get starters. So I am worried. I think offensive line is really hard to fix in one portal cycle.
All right. So who is second on your panic meter here, fall camp edition?
Let's go Oklahoma, Mike. They've had a lot of injuries this fall camp. So I'm a little bit panicked, but I'm not overly panicked here. So let's put it at a 4. Oklahoma's injuries are enough to catch my attention, but not enough to have me overly concerned. Ask me after the Illinois State game if the injury report is still pretty lengthy because, you know, they've been missing receivers, offensive line, Jaden Ott. They've been missing Eli Bowen. So I am a little bit worried about the volume here, but also it's still, you know, 15, 16 days for kickoff or more. I think they'll be okay. So it's just a 4 in the panic meter, but it's got my attention.
How much would things change for you, Steven, if Oklahoma opened against Michigan? Would that change anything for you in terms of, uneaseness? I don't know if that's a word, but maybe even for Michigan, you know, if they had to open against Oklahoma, just the fact that we have like a week to get our footing here against an opponent we should blow the doors off of, does that kind of ease any injuries or any nicks or anything for the Sooners?
It does. It eases my concerns because you can, I mean, to use a bad word, you can ease into the season here with all the pieces. And also, Mike, I think thinking ahead a little bit here, how much do you want to show against Illinois State in the season opener? Wouldn't you rather have the element of surprise on your side when you play Michigan the next week?
Yeah, so maybe like run the triple option against Illinois right. State and then right. go full air raid yeah. against right. Michigan.
Right. I'm thinking it's interesting because I could see it working both ways for Oklahoma. Like I could see Mateer coming out, putting on a show. It gets good vibes going against Michigan. You need sort of live reps to kind of get on the same page. But also I could see them maybe holding some stuff back for that week two game because Michigan's defense is really good and that is going to be a heck of a non-conference showdown.
Yeah, I've heard this tip, Stephen. I bet you would agree with it. Take the under in Oklahoma, yes. Michigan. I don't think a lot of points are going to be scored in that one.
Right. True freshman starting for Michigan, we think. A Michigan offense that loves to run the ball and a good defense. Yeah, this one's probably the first one to 20 maybe wins.
All right, so who else is on your panic meter, Stephen?
We talked about Missouri. Got a Missouri helmet up there for all the good Missouri fans this week. Caden Green played a little bit of left tackle in practice the other day. So I'm wondering, where is this offensive line? We talk about quarterbacks all offseason for Missouri, but what's the concern level about the offensive line and new faces? So are they struggling to find a left tackle? Are they still trying to figure out the right five? What does that all mean? I'm not overly concerned yet, but I'm putting this at a five because I do think we talk so much about quarterbacks. The offensive line has kind of flown under the radar this offseason.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe quarterback's not the biggest issue if they can't get the offensive line. And we're not saying they don't have it right, but that is something to consider there in Columbia.
I'm. It's like mixing and matching doesn't really surprise me because you see this with a lot of teams in the fall, you know, trying to find the right five. But it also does kind of raise your eyebrow a little bit that you're now a couple weeks into fall practice and you're trying to still experiment maybe to find the right group. You know, the good thing for Missouri is when you look at that early schedule, you know, Kansas, they're going to be rebuilding a little bit on defense. They weren't one of the better defenses in the Big 12 last season. And then really South Carolina on September 20th is kind of your first big defensive test. So if you need two or three games to figure it out, you've got it. But also for as much as we devoted about the quarterbacks, I still think offensive line is a real question for this team.
Mm-hmm. And apologies if I've already hit you with this, Stephen. I can't recall. My brain is kind of mush these days. But, you know, we interviewed Cole Kublik at SEC Media Days, and, you know, we asked him who is the best coordinator in the SEC. And without hesitation, he said offensive coordinator at Missouri, Kirby Moore, which, again, I'm not – that's kind of where I was at a year ago. I thought he looked like $1 million. You know, when Missouri won the 10 or 11 games, excuse me, don't want to cost them a game here. But then again, even last year, I mean, it was offense was a disappointment. I mean, I was thinking like LSU 2019 was going to come out here and we were far from that. Now we had injuries at quarterback. But maybe that was a huge part of it. If Kirby Moore is, and maybe not even the best coordinator, because that's pretty lofty status, but if he cements himself as, like, let's say a top five coordinator in the conference this year by putting out another terrific performance, how good could this Missouri offense be, do you think, if Kirby Moore is a top five coordinator in this conference?
If Kirby Moore has a top five or he ends up being the best coordinator in the SEC this year for offense, I think a lot of these concerns we're talking about, quarterback play, offensive line, like you're going to have to kind of schematically and also play calling be able to adjust. I think if you're telling me that, then I think that means either Prabula or Sam Horn ended up being really solid. Missouri ends up being a 9-3, 10-2 type team that's right there in the playoff mix. I think if you're telling me that's the kind of season, that's what I would expect. I do think Ryan Grubb or Petrino, if we're talking outside of head coaches, would be near the top of my list. Like, this is excluding like Sark and some of those guys who head coach call plays as offensive coordinator.
Hey, shout out Cousin Dakota. Steven, he gave us $10. Sooners would put 70 on a girl school. It's their style. Well, hey, it's your job to stop them, as old Steve Spurrier would say. It's not their job to take your foot off the gas. So score away on those ladies, I say. All right, anybody else on the panic meter here, Stephen?
Mike, I've got a couple more here for you. We'll go progressively up in the concern level here. So Saturday, following scrimmage, you know, news and, you know, the Texas offensive line and defensive battle and all the news coming out of Austin, like, what do you make of it? First of all, I'm not that worried. Texas is not, this Texas defensive front is pretty nasty. So if Texas offensive line did struggle and you're leaving the scrimmage with some concerns, I'm putting the panic meter at 4. Where I do worry about Texas is you are replacing 4 starters on the offensive line, and you have lost a guy in Andre Kojo to help with depth on the right side. So you're taking away a key depth piece on already a group that has some turnover. So I think what happens in fall practice against one of the nation's best defensive fronts doesn't really surprise me. I mean, obviously they're going to play Georgia, they're going to play Oklahoma, they're going to play Florida. I think what worries me is if this group has another major injury, that panic meter will go from 4 to 8, because it is a 14, 15, 16 game season now, and you got to stay healthy up front.
I see what you did there, Steven. I hope the Cousins caught it. It's not Arch's fault. It's the Lions' fault. Is that, that's where your head's at right now?
I mean, quarterbacks are dependent on their supporting cast. I mean, of course. They got to have a good offensive line. They got to have a receiving core. So, yeah.
Hey, shout out Cousin Rick. Steven, he gave us $20. Thank you, Rick. Not so bold prediction. A&M's offensive line wins the Joe Moore Award, which is the award given to the nation's top offensive line, and has 5 players drafted. Bite the hell out of Notre Dame. He's already looking ahead to Notre Dame, Steve. That's a couple games in. But thoughts on that. A&M's offensive line, who returns, I believe, their top 7 snaps from the offensive line alone last year. Cousin Rick's predicting them to win the Joe Moore Award and get 5 players drafted. He may be right. I don't know how bold that is.
I like that prediction, Mike. I did notice that, in some of our Texas A&M friends can kind of correct me here. I saw that Trey Zun was actually working at center some in fall practice. So it feels like a little different situation from Missouri. Like, you have some depth. I know Mark Naboo coming back from injury. So I know Texas A&M should feel very good about its depth. I think this is one of the top 5 offensive lines in the country. So I think they can definitely win the Joe Moore Award. And I think they will definitely have at least 4 or 5 guys drafted off of the starting group.
Yeah, so no panic there.
Zero on the panic meter for the offensive line. Yeah, very true. Yeah.
All right, so who's next? Who are you ready to be hit that panic button in the SEC?
We're going to raise it a couple notches, Mike. Tennessee's passing game. Let's set it at 7. So, a lot of new pieces here. Obviously, Joey Aguilar. There's the quarterbacks. The other quarterbacks, you know, are younger, too. A lot of injuries at receiver, new offensive line. There's a lot of new, and there's a lot of transition. I'm not panicked to the 100th percentile yet, but I am concerned, because I want to see Tennessee get some of these guys back healthy. You got to see your full lineup for a couple practices there to get Aguilar or Merklinger ready to go for the season opener. So I'm getting a little bit concerned here for Tennessee when the concern coming out of the scrimmage is the passing game, and practice still needs a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's multiple seasons in a row, whether they want to admit it or not, Tennessee fans have been unsatisfied with the quarterback play with Joe Milton, who's in the NFL still, with Nico. And I get it. You know, we don't have to rehash all that, but, and then even prior to that, I mean, he did pick Joe Milton over Hendon Hooker. So, again, I'm not sitting here questioning Josh Heupel, but the recent track record is interesting, to say the least. But again, maybe they just set such an incredibly high bar in 22 that they'll never quite be able to match at. But it is slightly concerning that the direction, I mean, the defense looks like it could be just as good, perhaps, as last year. But we're sitting here in year five of the Heupel era. And, you know, just trying to figure out where are we on offense with question marks literally out basically the entire unit.
If you would have told me, if you go back to when Josh Heupel was hired and said, what is the storyline going into 2025? I would say always, you can almost make a template, like Tennessee's offense is going to be good. The questions are going to be on defense. And it's funny to almost see that flipped this offseason. Tennessee's losing some pieces on defense, but you feel good about that side of the ball. There could be two counterpoints to all this, is that maybe Tennessee's defense is just really that good in fall practice. And Tennessee's offense is kind of much like Texas. If there are some issues, Tennessee's defense is causing that. The other thing is, Heupel has done a good job of adapting each year, whether it was the high-powered Hendon Hooker offense last year, lean on defense, lean on running game. So you do have some concerns, but don't you have to kind of give Heupel a little bit of a benefit of the doubt to say, these are all the ingredients, they can kind of figure this out as they go?
No, it's full negative all over here, Stephen. Doom and gloom, season's over. And shout out Monkey 423. I got to imagine he's an East Tennessee guy like me. I started watching, he's talking about Tennessee here, in the Butch Jones days. I have no standards. So excellent point. It could literally be worse. Here, I'm sitting here bitching about a guy that's won 30 games in the last 3 years. That is asinine. He's a hell of a coach. So they'll get it figured out. But
just made the playoff last year.
Like, he's on the hot seat. Right. You know what?
Yeah. Like, you're one bad loss in the SEC away from the hot seat. Right.
That Purple Haze says fire everyone. I'm right there with him.
But again,
all it took was Steven saying, you know, they're high on the panic meter, and I'm like, geez, yeah, they can't beat it. They may not beat Syracuse in the opener. You know, I'm totally out on them.
Mike, if Tennessee loses to Syracuse, I can't wait to watch you and Shane go live and the panic meter that will be set off by Vols fans, if that's the case, in the first game of the season, because that would be that would require a pretty big meltdown, I think, by Tennessee.
I was going to say a bold prediction. It's not bold at all. Prediction, because this is going to happen. If Tennessee loses a game like that, Shane ain't showing up. It takes him about 24 hours to process something like that. I'll be on here. But he will not be showing up. Hey, shout out SEC Truman. Steven, he gave us $20. Please explain. South Carolina be ranked top 15, and MU, I assume Missouri, not being ranked when Missouri has finished better the last 2 years. Lemming situation. Media picks a few takes and lazy parrots them, and then are shocked when they're wrong. How would you explain that to SEC Truman, Stephen, that Missouri's not ranked while South Carolina's number 15?
I think first of all, I will say I'll take a shot here at some of the voters. I do think there are some lazy voters in some of these polls. I mean, I just like you see some, and then you see some of the analysis, and you're like, okay. I do think that if you're average AP voter, you're probably looking at Missouri's, just simply looking at who they lost and the questions coming into this year. You're looking at South Carolina and saying they have a Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback. I do think, and you know, I believe South Carolina can be a playoff contender. I do think we ought to probably scrutinize South Carolina's depth chart a little bit closer, and the losses on the offensive line and defense. That's probably one of those things that having somebody like Sellers or Dylan Stewart can kind of cover up for. But also, like we talked about earlier, Missouri did not get any respect last year from the AP or the coaches. They were at the bottom of those rankings despite winning 10 games. And so if you just kind of put your priors into play here and say they were a bottom top 25 team last year, they're losing this, this, and this, all of a sudden I think it's easy to see how they're outside of the rankings. I do think in it's not fair to Missouri, high expectations at the start of last year. Maybe they didn't quite meet them, especially offensively. I do think they're undervalued in these polls, and I think they're undervalued in the over-under. So I know that doesn't make the rankings any better, but I do think they're much closer to a top 25 team than like 35 or so.
Yeah, and I will add this, Stephen, where going back to lazy voters, again, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, they're just going to get the benefit of the doubt because they're name programs and all that. But they have questions at quarterback. You know who doesn't? LSU. Give them number nine. You know who doesn't? South Carolina, 13. Florida. Well, I mean, technically, I guess they do, because we don't know the status, even though they try to sell us on every opportunity that DJ Lagway is 100%. So let's give them 15. Whereas Ole Miss, I know Ole Miss fans are over the moon on Simmons, but most of the voters have probably not watched him for any length other than the Georgia series. Tennessee doesn't have a quarterback, right? Give them 24. Missouri's doesn't have a quarterback that we know of, you know, or we don't even know who that is. So there, we can't rank him. You see what I'm saying? So I, again, going back to Stephen, who were just flamethrowing all the AP voters, but it's true. I mean, if you got a quarterback, you are given the benefit of the doubt. And as stupid as that is in a team sport like football, that has literally been the case as long as I can remember it. So I think that is a huge part of it.
I also think as this goes to the point total at the top of the AP poll, I do think, and I think the portal and NIL has scrambled all this to where if you're like a top, I mean, the top 10 are pretty close. 11 through 35 are really close to, and it may not seem like it because it's like, well, it's 11 and 35. As somebody who's got like a little kind of power rating system, there's really not that much separation in there. So my biggest thing on like the AP and the coaches poll is that you should be willing to adjust like your priors coming into the season. Like just like last year, like Florida State, they lost, they dropped out. Like whatever happens, we should be reacting to that. We should not just be holding on saying, well, if you have Missouri at 35, you shouldn't keep him there all year. Like be willing to adjust your rankings. And I think that's maybe where Missouri gets hurt, is because people see the blue bloods of college football and probably give them a benefit of the doubt as opposed to Missouri that won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Hey, you know, also excellent point, Stephen. Brandon Norwood gifted a membership, Stephen, to Purple Haze. Purple Haze, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Dang it, I just went off of it. Brandon Norwood, we appreciate you for gifting that. And Purple Haze, welcome. All right, Stephen, any other panic meters? We're nearly an hour in here. We haven't even gotten to the breakout players. Steve has got a family, people. We can't be keeping them all night here.
Mike, I've got one more in the panic meter. And this one is okay. 10. It's breaking the thermometer. There's mercury everywhere. Maybe that's impacting my brain. It's Florida. Injuries at receiver, DJ Lagway. What exactly is going on there? You know, maybe participating in some workouts, not participating in all of them as he tries to get back 100%. Yeah, kickoff is still a few weeks away. They play Long Island, they play South Florida before they play LSU. So they have some time to get all these pieces healthy. I would like to see this lineup with Lagway playing at full strength and these receivers at least at the end of fall practice in the first game, just to get some rust knocked off before you get to those SEC games. But I'm very worried about Lagway, and I'm very worried about how this impacts the offense overall.
Yeah, Napier had a press conference this afternoon, Stephen. I don't know if you caught it. You know, it's hard for me to suffer through an entire one. But I did hear, I think it was Edgar Thompson of the Orlando Sentinel. He asked Napier, you know, if you have a game on Saturday, would DJ Lagway play? And Billy Napier responded, we don't have a game on Saturday. So, all right. So that's good information. As always, I mean, that's about what we've come to expect with how they're handling this situation. It's just, it's something.
I think the secrecy and just the overall uncertainty are making me really uneasy about this. Is that kind of how you feel on this too?
Yes. And again, I've not been trying to I'm not the ultimate insider of insiders. I don't try to break news, but when I had half a dozen people telling me you need to pay attention to this DJ Lagway, I tried to wave the flags here and Florida fans told me to shut up. And now we're August 11th and the guy is still not a full participant. So I don't know. I'm just sharing what I get told when I get told it. So, all right, Stephen, let's get into breakout candidates. Some of these were far more difficult for me. I don't know about you. I actually have at least one for every single team. And for some teams, I got two. And I tried to base this almost, exclusively on what I'm hearing in these camps, these scrimmages, how things are going. So who would you like to do first here, Stephen?
We haven't talked about LSU a ton yet. What if we start with the Bayou Bengals here?
Perfect. Who you got as your breakout candidate?
Mike, I had a hard time with this one. I found about five players I like as breakout candidates.
Okay.
Well, so we'll settle on one. What about Tre'Dez Green at tight end? You know, I liked what I saw out of him in the bowl game. Six catches, two of those went for touchdowns. LSU's got a great receiving core. I could talk about Chris Hilton all day and his big playability. But I think, you know, you're replacing Mason Taylor, Tre'Dez Green kind of stepping in there, physically very talented, already proven it. I think he could be a breakout tight end for LSU this season.
Yeah, no, I like that pick, Steven. That's a good one. The only problem, and again, it's not really going to negatively affect him, but it sounds like Nussle's got so many weapons to work with. You know, again, that's a good problem and a bad problem. You know, I mean, heck, last time LSU won the national championship, they had a lot of weapons too. So they were able to spread that ball around. How about defensive lineman, Stephen, Dominic McKinley, who, according to Brian Kelly, they had to literally add weights that they never had in the LSU locker room because the guy is such a beast that he's like shattering LSU weight records. So he was a former five-star. He's been banged up a little bit, sophomore. I think LSU, you know, there was a time, Steven, wasn't that long ago, LSU was dominant on defense. They may be getting back to that this year, year two, Blake Baker, but it's all got to start up front. I know they hit the portal. I tried to stay away from quarterbacks. I tried to stay away from portal as much as I could with these breakout candidates because those are kind of obvious ones. But give me Dominic McKinley. If he's who they say he is, I think he could be the next defensive line star for LSU.
Mike, I like that call because I think to your point, you know, you're bringing in Patrick Payton, you're bringing in Jack Pyburn to sort of solidify the edges. If you can get McKinley and Jacoby and Guillory and maybe, you know, Bernard Gooden, the other transfer they brought in from South Florida, you've got a pretty formidable front. So you need the transfers to hit, but also some of those homegrown guys. And I think also just being a kind of, you know, almost like second year player in the system, another year to go through the SEC weight room pays off for a lot of those defensive tackles.
Hey, shout out Cousin Rick, another donation here, Steven. What a guy. Second, not so bold prediction from Cousin Rick. Le'Veon Moss, Reuben Owens, Amari Daniels, and Marcel Reed lead the SEC in rushing. Still beat the hell out of Notre Dame. Shout out Cousin Rick. So let's do A&M next, but would you like to address his prediction here, Steven? Could you see A&M leading the SEC in rushing?
I could. Great offensive line. I think if it's not number one, not number two, it's got to be number three, somewhere in the top three in the country. And especially with the depth that they have. So if they have some injuries, they could shuffle some guys around. Very deep at running back too. So last year, A&M was second in the SEC in rushing offense, just behind Tennessee first. I think that is spot on. I think A&M, with that offensive line and backfield and offensive identity, I think they lead the SEC in rushing.
Wow. Okay. So who's your breakout candidate for the Aggies?
Oddly enough, I almost went with everybody's talking about Le'Veon Moss, but did anybody remember how good Reuben Owens was a couple years ago? But I decided to go with Cassius Howe. Maybe I'm cheating a little bit because he's on my all SEC team, but they just need somebody to step up on the defensive line. 8.5 tackles for a loss last season. Another guy that he transferred in. He's now had another off season to get acclimated to life in the SEC. I think he has a breakout year.
Steven, I think you nailed it because I got Cassius Howell as well. So I'll go with my backup option here. Deion Hayes, the Colorado transfer who tore it up in the spring. And to your point, we need defensive linemen to step up. You know, they're not devoid of talent, certainly, but they did lose the trio of defensive linemen to the NFL draft, all high round picks. So we need guys to step up. Mike Elko, you know, we've really got to see his defense take that next step forward. And they're singing the praises of the secondary. They got some really good talent at at linebacker, but we need the defensive line to do their part and kind of anchor this group. And as long as Mike Elko is there, I'm going to have confidence in him to do it.
I think the defensive line for Texas A&M could be almost, not necessarily anonymous, but it's almost like the collection overcomes having a Scorton or Shamar Turner or Shamar Stewart. Like, you don't have first or second team all SEC guys, but the collection feels pretty good. What about Terry Bussey? Did you consider him at all?
Yeah, that's a great candidate. I didn't have him on my list, but yeah, I should have. I think he is primed for a breakout season.
As good as Concepcion and Craver are going to be, I think it someone who maybe is like solely focused on receiver in the offseason could pay dividends for Bussy because I think he's really talented.
Hey, shout out to Crazy Cheese Wiz. He gave us a donation here, Stevens. Bold prediction, LSU has a top five defense in the SEC. I'm selling that. What, are you buying it?
I'm buying.
Ooh.
Mike, I think I may have made this bold prediction a few weeks ago that LSU would have like a top five-ish defense in the SEC. I think Texas, Georgia, Alabama kind of come to your mind right away. You know, and of course, I should say like top five is a little bit – it's a little bit ambiguous. Is it by the stats? Is it by scoring defense or kind of however metric you want to put it? Oklahoma certainly in that conversation as well. But I think LSU will be much improved on defense. I just like the personnel combined with Blake Baker's second year. I think this defense makes major strides this season.
Mm, yeah. I think you're wrong, but okay.
How you're about, wrong before, yeah. Many times.
How about Arkansas, Steven? Where would you go for the breakout candidates for the Razorbacks?
Maybe this is too obvious, but I went with Braylon Russell. Man, I just think the combination of Braylon Russell and Mike Washington, the 1-2 punch with Taylen Green. I know there's a lot of new, there's a lot of transfers. There should be some optimism that Petrino is in the lab tinkering with some ways to get these guys the ball. Really, you know, really interesting size talent combo for Russell. So I think he could be a breakout candidate, and certainly acknowledging that he may share carries with Mike Washington too.
Yeah. Hey, interesting name you said there, Steven. So that's the guy that's apparently tearing it up, Mike Washington. So that's where I went. I do like everything you said about Braylon Russell. Can he carry the load exclusively? But he probably won't have to because they do got Mike Washington. So it'll be a little bit of a duo here. That's my breakout candidate. And then, you know, the receivers, they someone's got to break out. And all the Razorbacks tell me Omega Blake is that guy. So if I can cheat and kind of pick two transfers here, that's what I'm going to do.
I had comboed Omega Blake and Raylan Sharp almost because the deficit of passes like gone, like with Andrew Armstrong departed, like somebody's going to emerge. Like, is it Sharp catching a bunch of passes out of the slot? Is it Omega Blake catching big plays? I think probably the greater concern for me was I tried to, when I did this exercise, I went like offense and defense and tried to find a few names and pick one. Had a hard time on Arkansas's defense. So there's some depth in spots, but I kind of came away a little concerned about that.
Hey, shout out Matt, Steven. He's got, he gave us 10 bucks. Buy or sell, Mike Bobo, bottom five coordinator in the SEC. The Bobo jokes never go away, do they? So are you buying that, a bottom five coordinator, Mike Bobo?
I don't know if I'd buy that. Would you sell that? I think
I'm selling that. I think Mike Bobo is very underrated.
I will say I'm selling that, but I think Todd Monken was way more creative, came up with different ways to get guys the ball. I think Bobo's a little bit more cut and dry. Like I don't think there's necessarily the same amount of creativity, which does concern me a little bit. I mean, I could, the bottom offensive coordinators in the SEC, I mean, like Bush Hamden would be in that mix for me. I don't think Mike Bobo's like close to that right now.
Mm-hmm. Big if, because Georgia very well could win the national championship this year, Steven. But if they don't, then obviously that's a disappointment. 3 years in a row, what would be more at fault, do you think? Mike Bobo or the quarterbacks that Georgia has had? Again, Carson Beck, you know, there was all that hype, and he wasn't awful. You know, some people make it out to be he was awful, although at times he was. I guess Alabama in particular, I think. But you know, he brought them all the way back. Who do you think would be more at fault for Georgia not winning the national championship 3 years in a row?
My guess is that Bobo might be a fall guy. Because I think it goes back to, and I know Georgia fans probably won't like using a rival, but watching the Georgia Tech Georgia game at the end of last season, like there was a clear difference in like Buster Faulkner's ability. He was on staff at Georgia a few years ago. The way that he uses different formations and gets the ball to playmakers is a little bit different than what I was seeing out of Georgia. Now, maybe there's some other factors in there too, with injuries and, you know, quarterback changes and stuff. So I think if they underachieve, my guess is that it probably goes to Bobo, unless all the quarterbacks are just like really bad, which seems unlikely for Georgia.
Matt says Bobo had Stafford, AJ Green, Knowshon Moreno on the same team, zero championships. Well, there was a man named Nick Saban roaming the sidelines back in too. You know what?
That is true. You know, also kind of worth considering, like, some of those Georgia teams, if they we had the expanded playoff, then like how, you know, how different some of these years in college football could have been, because I'm guessing like there would have been some teams in the SEC that were just roadblocked by Alabama that would eventually run into Alabama again, but they would have probably won some playoff games, and maybe we look at their resume a little different.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, so we've been down on Tennessee, Steven. Let's give the Vols something to be excited about. Who's a breakout candidate for Tennessee?
I was going to say Mike Matthews, but he's been injured. So I don't know. Maybe he doesn't qualify as a breakout candidate. So I think there's one guy that I keep hearing about, and Mike, you've talked about him. I'm going to go with Colton Hood at cornerback. I think with Jermaine McCoy banged up, Hood transferring in from Colorado, I think you need some, you know, you're going to need some experience. You can need to fill in for McCoy early in the season. I like what I'm hearing from him. So I'm going to go Colton Hood to play a key role and be a breakout star for the Tennessee defense.
Well, interesting, Steven, because, you know, we all know what Josh Heupel is known for. Dominant defense. You went with a defensive guy. I got two defensive guys. Edwin Spielman, redshirt freshman linebacker. He has been described as a monster in a room by the linebacker coach William Inge this camp. So he was I believe he was the highest rated prospect that Tennessee signed a year ago. So in two classes ago, it looks like he's ready to be a breakout candidate. And Dominique Bailey, who's been around forever, coach Rodney Garner, I think for my money, the best defensive line coach in the country, has called Bailey the MVP in the defensive line room this camp. So I think this could be the next two great Tennessee defenders. And I'm back to being concerned again, because we cannot find a single offensive player to be excited about.
I think these are all good things though for Tennessee though, but you're right about the offense. Like if Spielman ends up being good, you throw him with what Arian Carter, to Lander as well. Also, I do like Joshua Josephs. I know he's getting some preseason buzz and all that, maybe a little bit more established, but maybe he goes from being a kind of good, maybe more rotational player to more of the frontline player this year, with James Pierce off to the NFL. So I feel good about Tennessee's defense. If Mike Matthews was healthy, I probably would say he's probably due for a breakout year, because somebody's going to catch passes there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then shout out Scooter. He says, Star Thomas, that is someone Heupel talked up. And again, Tennessee's going to be, they're going to be able to run the ball. That's what they always do. So, I mean, I'm kind of kidding here, guys. But all right, how about, where would you like to go next, Steven? Any team in particular?
How about, let's do South Carolina.
Ooh, okay. Who's your breakout candidate for the Gamecocks?
I've got a couple, Mike. I'll start with one, and I'll let you see what you think. I've got Josiah Thompson at left tackle. You know, he started 12 games as a true freshman, kind of went through the battles of the SEC, second year through the conference. I would anticipate another step forward. Struggled a bit, six sacks allowed, but I think given the talent that he's got, he could be a standout left tackle for South Carolina, a team that's breaking in a lot of new pieces up there with on the interior with three new starters.
Yeah, no, I love that pick, Steven. How about this one? I'm going with defensive end Brian Thomas, who he's a veteran player, and South Carolina's really, you know, turned it up a notch on the defensive side of the football. And why I'm really going with him, Steven, you know, stay with me here, if this makes sense. Dylan Stewart, I just think, is such a dynamic player that I think offenses are going to have to know where this guy is at all times. And his statistics may not match last year, and that's not necessarily a bad thing for the Gamecocks, because he'll just be such a focal point. That's going to leave the other guys more opportunities to make big-time plays. So give me Brian Thomas, South Carolina defensive lineman.
I like that call, and also it echoes something you said about defensive linemen, is that sometimes stats don't tell us how dominant they are. It's like, you know, with Dylan Stewart, he may not get to double-digit sacks this year, but that could be because he's being double and triple teamed the whole game, which right. opens the door for somebody like Brian Thomas. So I like that call. I would also throw out, Fred Johnson, the linebacker here, because they lost so much at linebacker stepping in. I've heard nothing but good things about his talent. So small role last season, stepping up into a bigger role this year.
Yeah, definitely going to need some linebackers to step up there in Columbia. Hey, shout out Matt D. Just became a member, Steven. Matt, welcome to
the family.
To hell with Bobo. He's the one that donated shouting out Bobo. So, yeah, I bet Bobo sucks. He's not welcome to his family, but you are, Matt. We appreciate you, buddy. All right, hey, maybe for Matt, I have to assume he's a Georgia fan. Let's do Georgia next. Who's your breakout candidate for them dogs?
This might be too obvious, but I really, really like this player. I like KJ Bolden at safety. Going from, you know, kind of, I would say with Malachi Starks, he was the leader of the back end. Now you throw KJ Bolden taking over that role. I think he's going to go from people know him in the SEC to being a nationally known breakout player for this Georgia defense.
Ooh, interesting, Steven. How about the other safety spot? I'm hearing good things. I completely forgot all about this guy. UAB transfer Adrian Maddox, Steven, mm-hmm. who it sounds like he could be the starting safety opposite KJ Bolden. So that's a name to know. I believe he was going to transfer to Florida. Changed his mind, went to Georgia. He should be your favorite dog, if not for no other reason. And then I'm also hearing great things, Steven, about running back Bo Walker, true freshman, who Georgia's had a long, long line of damn good dogs there at the running back position. Bo Walker could be that guy. And I know they're still very high on Nate Frazier. I'm not saying he's going to take his job or anything, but Bo Walker, how about that? Breakout, true freshman running back.
I like that call. Feels like Georgia's got a couple good running backs that they could rely on. Like whether that's Nate Frazier, Josh McCray, was it Chauncey Bowens and some of those other guys, they're deep at running back. They may not have somebody get to 1,000 yards, but they could definitely pound the rock with multiple players. So I definitely like, I don't know what the statistical impact is, but I think you're counting on him for some plays. I would also throw up maybe Ellis Robinson at corner. You know, played last year, ultra talented, maybe year two, the light kind of comes on a little bit more for him. You know, I would also throw maybe somebody in the offensive line breaks out too, because four new starters and they're all pretty talented. Maybe like Drew Bobo at center.
Yeah. Hey, shout out Russ. Not only become a member, Steven, he gave us $5. Sooner born and bred. Sooner born, sooner bred. And when I die, I'll be sooner dead. Boomer. That's awesome. So let's do Oklahoma for old Russ here. Steven, who's your breakout candidates for the Sooners?
This is a little bit of a wild card. I'm going to go with Kendall Daniels. He's a transfer, so I'm kind of breaking Mike's rule here a little bit. He's a transfer from Oklahoma State, but what I really liked about him at Oklahoma State, and I think he brings this to Oklahoma's defense, the versatility. He can play linebacker. He can play safety. He can be kind of a chess piece that you can move around. And when you're going to play different style offenses like a Michigan that's going to want to bring the hammer, you're going to play some spread attacks, like having somebody who can be versatile linebacker safety is pretty valuable. He was a good player on a bad Oklahoma State defense. He had over 100 tackles in 2023, solid year last season. I trust Brent Venables to get much more out of his talent than Oklahoma State's staff did. So give me Kendall Daniels.
Well, you know, I said I was going away from transfers as much as I could. So, and I'm also going away from the kind of obvious candidates. So, obviously, John Mateer would be that guy. Jay Knott, that guy. But I'm not trying to pick those guys. So, give me defensive lineman Taylor Wynn, Steven. Only two tackles in his career. But apparently, going back to the spring, he has been a guy to watch on the practice field, and he's carried that over to training camp. So Cole Kubelik's been on this show among his own and said Oklahoma's got the best defensive line in the SEC. I think they got guys that maybe are like three deep that could break out like a Taylor Wynn. So how about that, Steven? I mean, Oklahoma might be that deep on the defensive line, and maybe that's why Oklahoma makes a huge surprising run if they legitimately have all these defensive linemen.
I agree. If this is not the best defensive line in the country, it's like number two or number three in the country. Great last name also for a defensive lineman. Like, you know, you talk about the win rates of defensive linemen or pass rushing. Also, not many teams have like the four dudes that they have at defensive tackle. It's hard to keep good tackles because they all want to move around and play. So to have that depth and to have the edge rushers, that's why I feel good about Oklahoma. When we start, like, as the off season progresses, I just keep like buying up more Oklahoma stock here.
No doubt. You know who else I'm buying their stock, Steven? Cousin Royce. Royce Pierce just gifted 10 memberships, Steven. That's incredible. Shout out Forrest Whittle, Sorley 09, Jerlexis, I hope I said that right. Mike Jones, Savage Ag, Fabian James. These are so hard to read. Grupal Travel, Cherokee Cooch. I'm just reading the name, folks. Tony Pierce, Zach Cook. Da-da-da-da. I think that's all of you. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, shout out, Royce. We appreciate you. And shout out JP for making these sound effects.
Welcome to the family.
And then Royce also, man, what a guy, Cousin Royce. I figured out $20 gift. Got to do it from my computer. LSU. So we appreciate you, Royce. What a guy. I take back every bad thing I ever said about LSU. I said a whole lot.
Mike just moved LSU into the playoff now. So.
No, not just playoff. Winning the national championship. So for old Cousin Royce, you know what?
Didn't you pick LSU to win the national title a few years ago?
And they had the offense to do it? Yes, yeah. I did. Of course, they had the defense that wouldn't have won the Sun Belt, which kind of did end that prediction. They lost the opener and lost three games that year.
Maybe you were just a few years off, right? That could be. Yeah.
The funniest thing, Florida State fans got a hold of our feed, and they called Shane and I a bunch of – they said, look at these fat plumbers, and I think is what they called that. That hurt, but it was too funny not to laugh at, you know?
And you guys didn't dress up as Mario and Luigi for Halloween after?
Oh, we should have. Missed opportunity, no doubt. All right, how about Missouri? Steven, we've had a lot of Missouri donations, so let's give some love. I know we've talked a lot of Missouri so far, but who's your breakout candidates for the Tigers?
I'm going to cheat just a bit here. I'm going to bracket two receivers. I got Marquise Johnson and Joshua Manning here. Kevin Coleman, I think he's going to fit right in as basically a Luther Burden replacement. What other receiver is going to step up here? Because it feels like either Joshua Manning or Marquise Johnson is going to be that guy. Seeing some flashes out of both, which one ends up being a breakout star at receiver? That's the big question. So I like one of those guys to break out this year.
Yeah, I love it. Again, so Captain Obvious here is Ahmad Hardy, so I didn't go with that. I liked what Drink was saying about freshman running back Marquise Davis, so that could be a candidate. But how about this, Steven? Again, I know Missouri fans are well aware of this guy, and they're fired up for him, but landing Damian Wilson and some of these other transfers, you know, we're of the belief that Missouri can take it up. I mean, they were already good on defense. Maybe they could be dominant, but a guy that was making waves last year got injured. Maybe now's his time, Steven. Darius Smith, another former Georgia transfer. So who, again, he was making waves last camp, this time last year before going down. So, you know, this is kind of cheating, picking a transfer, but a transfer from 2 years ago that has yet to make his impact. I think he could be a big impact player for Missouri this year.
I think you could bracket both Georgia transfers, like Smith and also Damon Wilson too, right?
Right.
One of these guys is going to break out. They're really talented, and they're going to, like, Georgia, they had so many good defenders that now they have the open path to playing time here for Missouri's defense. So I could see both of them kind of breaking out.
Yeah. Hey, shout out. I'm breaking out Mag D. Mario Luigi. Perfect. I don't want to give it away because I don't think it'll be as fun if I give it away, Steven. But Shane and I have already talked about this Halloween. and the outfits we're going to wear. And I'll just let you guys know. I think it's going to blow everyone's mind because it's perfect. It's college football to a T. It's a meme, but I'm not going to say anything more because I don't want people to give it away. I'll tell you off air. And if I told you now, you would not be able to stop laughing for the rest of the show. So that's something to look forward to.
Right.
Come October. All right. Speaking of something to look forward to, Stephen, how about Texas? How about mighty Texas? How could we go this long and not talk Texas here? Breakout kid. I mean, you can't pick the whole damn team, Stephen. I know you want to. You can't pick Arch Manning. I'm setting my foot down. But anyone else that you're picking as a breakout here for the Texas Longhorns?
Mike, I don't know if I mentioned the name Arch Manning tonight, so we had to get it in. One mention of it. I actually have a couple candidates here for Texas, but I want to focus on a guy that has made some noise in fall camp, and that's Grayson Littleton, the freshman. He looks like he's going to fit somewhere in the secondary. I bring him up because of what Texas has to play in the season opener. They get Ohio State. They get Jeremiah Smith, the best receiver in the country, a true freshman on the road at Ohio State. That's a tough spot, but Texas must feel really good about throwing him into the mix somewhere, wherever he fits in. So I'm going to take a chance on Grayson Littleton, like what I'm hearing all offseason about him.
Yeah, credit to you, Stephen. That's exactly who I had written down. I mean, there's so many players for Texas that, it could be their time. They got all this talent in the world. Even when they send people to the NFL, they ain't concerned, Steven, because the backup's even better. I don't know why they weren't playing last year for better, but that's the narrative down there in Austin. But Little John was my, Little John would be the only way that it'd be any better for old Grayson. But yeah, I mean, he sounds like he's so damn good. He's going to start as a true freshman at Star. So that's exactly who I went with as well.
Did you think about any of the receivers for Texas?
Yeah. I mean, I've already predicted Ryan Wingo, I think, leads the SEC in receiving. So that certainly got to throw him into the mix. Some of the offensive linemen are supposed to be really, really good. Can't wait to see them in action. But, I mean, there's just too many candidates to pick from down here in Austin.
Trevor Goosby. For sure, at left tackle. Also, I mean, I'm with you on Ryan Wingo. I was actually going to mention Parker Livingston at receiver because it feels like every time when I hear Ryan Wingo, I think like he's going to be an All-American, but I keep seeing Livingston's name pop up as well as somebody who pops every fall practice.
Hey, shout out Royce again, Steven. $10. This one's for you, Steven. I ordered the book and love it. Shout out Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. Thank you guys for the great content.
Oh, man. Thank you for buying the magazine. I appreciate that. Thanks for letting me know. Thanks for all the cousins for supporting the magazine, too. It means a lot. I appreciate all of you that reached out this offseason to let me know you picked it up. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, Steven works to nearly killing himself for the magazine. So go out there and get it done. It's just like Cousin Jet, we appreciate you, buddy. Member for 9 months. That's incredible, given that 9 months ago was still the offseason. People are talking about Arch, but they should be worried about Simmons and Hill on the defense. Monsters, hook them, no doubt. I mean, those guys already broke out. But, yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's questionable that Texas is going to have the best pass rush in the country this year.
I think that raises a good question about Texas, and it's something that I've thought about is, Arch is getting all the preseason hype, and rightfully so. I think he's going to be very good. I also think that it's almost like when you pick Texas to win the national title, it immediately becomes an Arch thing, but I think we forget about Texas has been on the doorstep the last 2 years, and they've got all these guys on defense, a defense that's really good. So I think it's sort of like the collective at Texas. Like, we've had some fun with the Arch Manning thing, but I think the collective of Texas, the pieces, is why they're the best team in the country. And certainly Simmons and Hill, a big part of that.
Yep. All right. How about, we've not talked a lot of Auburn, Stephen. There's probably a lot of good candidates here with this young roster. Who has Hugh Freeze not thrown under the bus yet in camp here?
He hasn't thrown this guy under the bus yet because he plays on defense. So I'm going to go with Caleb Harris at safety. He had a pretty solid year, around 50 tackles as a freshman. I like this Auburn secondary with some of the young pieces getting better. So I think Caleb Harris takes that step forward this year and maybe potentially pushes for all SEC honors. Also, just wanted to mention, too, if you're an Auburn fan, keep an eye on Rayshon Pleasant. He's a transfer from Tulane. If you like special teams, he might return a couple kicks for touchdowns this year.
Interesting. How about this name, Steven? True freshman running back Omar Mabson reclassified. So he should still be in high school. He's 5'9", 213 pounds. But according to, you know, people out there at practice and people, you know, on the team, they said this guy can really play and we need a running back to step up. I know they got some, Damari Austin's back and they've had some high profile running back that they've signed in recent years. So not saying he's going to like lead the SEC in rushing or anything, but wouldn't stun me if Omar Mabson, maybe he is our, you know, one of our featured running backs on the plains this fall.
I'll throw out another name at running back that I like. I like Darrell Robinson. He started his career at Charlotte and last year was at UConn, had a great season, averaged almost like 7 yards per carry. It does feel like Auburn's got a really kind of solid committee here, not necessarily like they don't have an all SEC first team back. But to your point, like Mabson, Darrell Robinson, Alston, they've got a nice little trio forming there for Hugh Freeze.
Mm-hmm. Too many options to count. All right. Speaking of too many options to count, let's stay in Alabama as my dog goes crazy. Who do you got for the Crimson Tide?
Mike, I almost wanted to pick Ty Simpson here as a potential breakout candidate, but I felt like that'd be cheating. So I had to go with James Smith here on the defensive line. You know, he played about 300 snaps, just over 300 snaps last season. I liked what he did in the bowl game against Michigan. Two tackles for a loss, picked up a sack. This defensive line, I think, has got a potential to be one of the best in the country. You got LT Overton getting to the quarterback. You need some maybe a little bit more depth. I think James Smith is one of those guys that could go from like 300 snaps. You throw a few more in there, he becomes a difference maker and just adds to the depth of that defensive front.
Hey, I like that pick, Steven, but and I'm going to break my rule here, but how about receiver Isaiah Horton? Because, again, we only get enamored with Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard's back. And, Ty Simpson, you know, that certainly is the most likely candidate. And we're hearing good things about the running backs down there in Tuscaloosa. But, man, if Isaiah Horton can come in here and add something to this offense that they were missing, I know Auburn gets all the love, as they probably should, as having the best receiving core in the SEC. But I think Alabama's going to give them a run for their money if Isaiah Horton is who they say he is.
I think Alabama might edge Auburn just a bit on receiver core, but it's close. Yeah. I mean, to your point, like Williams, Bernard, Horton, the size that he brings to the table. Also, you know, I know he's been sidelined this, but Brooks, the freshman receiver, was a guy a lot of people were excited about, and he's been banged up this preseason. So, I mean, that's going to be a good battle between those receiving cores for best in the conference. I was going to throw out Xavien Brown at corner. Maybe mm-hmm. Quay Rusall stepping up this year too. This is a very veteran team. It's kind of hard to find like guys who could make an impact. This like new impact players.
Exactly. Well, how about Florida, Steven? They're loaded with young talent. I got one name that I'm really excited to see this fall for the Gators. Who's that guy for you though?
Is Jaden Baugh cheating here as the breakout? Probably, right?
I feel like he's already broken out, okay. But you could go with that if you'd like.
I've got a different name, but I every time when I look at somebody else's like all SEC team, he doesn't seem to exist. So I thought maybe he was like maybe I'm living in a different planet. But I'm going to go with Miles Graham at linebacker. You got Pup Howard coming back at linebacker. We talked about how this defense kind of improved down the stretch. Like if some of these young guys like Miles Graham, LJ McCray, assuming he's healthy, there's a lot of young talent that just makes this defense even better. So was a top 10 linebacker recruit last year, played a little bit. I think he could take his game to the next level this season.
Hey, shout out Liquid. He says, oh boy, here we go. Florida, who's that guy? I need Billy to be that breakout guy. That's fair. And I'm glad you went with a different linebacker, Steven, because, again, I agree with everything you just said. But how about shout out Aaron Childs, who's apparently tearing it up in training camp, projected to be a backup. Florida may be that deep at linebacker this year that Aaron Childs, he may be too good to keep off the field, who's starring their recent scrimmage. So who knows? We can't write him off, and not that anyone's writing him off, but you know, he might have a much larger impact than people are anticipating. And people like Cousin Shane, who think Florida's going to be awful, they could be dead wrong if all these guys are solid.
Mike, you need more than just 11 defenders, right, to win in the SEC. So having a lot of depth would be a good thing for this Florida defense. Like it continues to build on that finish from last season. The play on the field improved. The personnel has gotten better. It's developed, and now you start adding some depth. I look at that schedule, too, and I start thinking about, like, Miami. I think Miami could be a running team early in the season, even though they have Carson Beck. You're playing at LSU, you know, early in the season, especially when you play Texas A&M and Texas, like the heat, the depth, like you need a second level. So the fact that Florida's got some dudes popping up there in the second level and that are very talented, I think is a good sign.
Yeah, I think old Hugh may have finally tracked me down the way my dog's barking. So apologies for that. But how about, we haven't done a breakout. We haven't talked much Kentucky aside from them going under. Who do you got as a breakout candidate for the Wildcats?
Was this really hard for you to find one?
It was, so I had to cheat here.
Yeah, I went with Jamori Macklin at receiver. You know, he averaged almost 24 yards per catch. This is almost like he started at North Texas a few years ago. There's no Barry and Brown. There's no Danky. He's kind of becoming the number one. Also, there's like a solid floor with Zach Calzada. I don't think he's going to be an all-SEC guy, but if anything, he's got experience in the SEC, and I think his ability to push the ball downfield gives Macklin a chance to, maybe you move him from the slot to the outside, you move him around, he can hit on some of those big plays we saw before.
Yeah, I'm hoping Mark Stoops is the breakout candidate or Bush Hamden, because that's who they desperately need. But I'm going with running back Seth McGowan. Again, I'm trying to stay away from transfers, but by all accounts, he's going to be that guy for Kentucky at running back. I think he's going to be their workhorse. So, again, he's a talented player. He's been all over New Mexico State, I believe Oklahoma. This is his opportunity to, you know, showcase his skill at the highest level here. So give me Seth McGowan. And if Kentucky surprises some people this year, Stephen, I think it's going to be because Seth McGowan's a lot better than we anticipate.
They had a good running back too, like Jamarian Wilcox. Like the fact that McGowan came in and beat him out for carries is a good sign. But also, you know, I think this kind of goes back to, we were talking a few weeks ago, watching Seth McGowan, like remembering that he was at Oklahoma and seeing him at New Mexico State. It was like, you could tell this guy's got SEC talent. He's like, he's playing like at Conference USA on the weeknights, and you know, some of those offensive lines aren't very good, but you could tell, like, okay, if he gets back, if he can put all the stuff that happened in the past, he gets back to the SEC, he could shine. So Kentucky's got good running backs. I think if their offensive line could hold up, they can sort of play that big blue wall style of football. It's good to see Mark Stoops is motivated maybe too. So
I see what you did there. Yeah. Speaking of motivated, all right, how about Ole Miss, Stephen? Who's your breakout candidate for the Rebels?
Mike, I wanted to cheat here and just list Austin Simmons because it's just so easy. It feels like he's one of the breakout quarterbacks. But I had to go somewhere else. What about Kawan Lacy? It looks like he's stepping up into the number one role at running back. They've got Logan Diggs. They've got Damian Taylor. So they've got some running backs. I am worried about the offensive line. But as much as Lane Kiffin knows quarterbacks, he knows how to churn out a good rushing attack. So Kawan Lacy, if he ends up as the number one running back, I think there's a chance he has a really nice season, provided the offensive line is good.
Yeah, I like that one, Steven. How about this one, though? Defense, we need some linemen to step up. Give me Cam Franklin, the sophomore, just 11 tackles last year, 5 tackles for loss. But it sounds like the defensive line has been really showing out in camp. Now, again, every time one side of the ball stands out, it's like, oh, God, well, maybe the other side's awful. So I'm not saying that. Even Steven has kind of questioned the offensive line, perhaps. But I think Cam Franklin's going to be that next guy playing for Pete Golding that, you know, he's had a long, long line of outstanding defensive players. I think Cam Franklin's next in line for old Pete Golding.
He was next on my list. I like that call. I had highlighted Franklin, Womack, or Princewill at defensive end there. Like somebody on the defensive line is going to step up at the end spots and create some havoc or on the interior. So I had Franklin as one of the guys' defensive breakouts for Ole Miss.
Well, staying in the state, Stephen, how about Mississippi State? Who's the breakout candidate for the Bulldogs?
Mike, I think there are a couple names to watch here for Mississippi State. One name that I liked at the end of last season was Zachary Tillman. He plays linebacker, had five tackles, two for a loss against Ole Miss, but I think he got better as the season progressed, and he kind of jumped on the radar late in the season. Now he's had a full year to kind of work as the starter or play a lot more snaps. I think he could be a breakout candidate for this defense at linebacker.
What about Cousin Sven's suggestion, same as mine, Stephen?
Oh, yeah.
Fluff Bothwell, South Alabama transfer, averaged nearly 8 yards per carry last year, over 832 rushing yards, 13 touchdowns at South Alabama. Mississippi State, I think they're going to be able to run the ball quite effectively with all the backs they have.
I like Fluff Bothwell, so I was like a nerd, like watching games against the Sun Belt last year. I do. My question on his impact is, like, you got Booth, you got Daniels, like you got a deep backfield, and I think their running backs are underrated. So, like, how do you get all these guys carries? It's a good problem to have. I think Mississippi State, I think, may have tweeted out like a run that he had either yesterday or today, and I was like, yep, that's it. There's Fluff Bothwell. Welcome to the SEC. I think he's going to be a nice player for Mississippi State this year.
All right, last one, Stephen Vanderbilt. Who's a breakout candidate for the Commodores?
You know how much I love Randon Fontenette, but he may be too high profile now that he's been picked on some all SEC teams. So I'm going to go with Trey Richardson from Washburn. He's a receiver. He can play some special teams. He brings some speed. He averaged, I think, what, over nearly 24 yards on kick returns. He caught 50 passes. It is a smaller level of play, but Vanderbilt needs a few guys who can stretch the field, and I think Richardson could be one of those guys this year for Diego Pavia.
Well, that's interesting, Stephen. You had, I had two receivers written down. Trey Richardson was one, so you took him. I'll take the other. Trent Hudson played with Diego played for this coaching staff at New Mexico State. Had 10 touchdowns last time he saw the field. Redshirted last year at Mississippi State. So maybe I'm just hoping that one of these guys breaks out. I don't think either one of them, considering the offensive style that Vanderbilt runs, is going to have massive numbers by any means. Maybe Hudson will have a bunch of touchdowns like he did playing at New Mexico State. That would be great news for the Commodores. But I think if one or both of these guys can just add just an added dimension of that big play that, you don't always want to dink and dunk and chew up the clock. I know that is kind of Vanderbilt's path to success, and I think they will continue to do that. But you can only get that done if you have that threat of the deep pass in your offense. And I think Vanderbilt will have more of that with some of the speed they've added this offseason to the roster.
And it's hard to, go multiple – like to crank out 10 play drives every time. I mean, Vanderbilt averaged 22 points a game in SEC play. If you could crank that up by a couple, to 26, 27, like that's kind of the next step for this offense. I mean, I trust Pavia and Jerry Kill and Tim Beck to keep it kind of where it is, but you do think there will be a little bit of this group evolving and adding some new elements to it. And one of the ways you do is you get a little bit more big plays. And so I don't think they're going to become like, Texas Tech, throwing the ball 50 times. But if you can maybe hit 4 to 5 more big plays, they turn into touchdowns. It gets a lot more, it adds a little bit more big playability to your offense, which helps you with the style they have. We know they can play that way, but can they give you something else? And that's kind of the next step for this offense.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, we have gone over 90 minutes. Feels like 98 if you're a Tennessee fan, because that's how long we've gone, 98 minutes here. I don't want to keep you any longer. I do appreciate all the time and the research you put into this. Before you go, you got any closing thoughts for the Cousins?
Mike, I know I mentioned at the beginning, but I'm starting to get fired up for football season. Every time I see like a John Mateer highlight, I keep getting ready for the next week zero. By next time it'll be kickoff. So as much as I enjoy talking preseason with you, I am going to be very excited to actually kick this game, the season off, and see some actual games next week.
Yeah, shout out Mike A. He said, Steven, Arch is ready for dinner. So Steven's got to go. Shout out all the cousins that donated and became members. We really, really do appreciate each and every one of you. We try to keep us as commercial free as possible. We do it only because you guys donating and fueling us this football season. So we appreciate each and every one of you. Like, and shout out JP for getting a roundup here. Cousin JR, Steven Up, Colin the Coxman, Gregory Grogan, Russ Wilcox, Dakota, Cousin Rick, Spectrum, Spectrum Man, Brandon Norwood, Cheese Whiz, Matt D, Roy Pierce. Thank you to each and every one of you. Don't forget to check out my bookie, promo code SEC, 100% deposit match, and our friends over at Tennessee Legend Distillery. If you haven't gone to your package store yet and asked for old Tennessee Legends, I don't know what you're doing with your life. But that's going to do it for Steven and I. We appreciate each and every one of you. Cousin Shane will be back on the next episode. Until then, we'll catch you tomorrow.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.